I have an incredibly special guest for the show today, Bianca Mollet, who, by the way, also goes by the name of Blanche, and we'll get to hear a little bit more about that story in just a bit. Bianca, tell us about yourself.
Hi, Robert, and hello, audience. Thank you. Okay, a bit about myself. First, I'm going to slow myself down because I'm a native New Yorker and tend to do everything very fast, including speaking. So, born in New York, background teaching, and spent my life teaching, the last 20 years teaching middle school, which was a wonderful, wonderful experience and required tons of energy. And I'm also, on the personal level, am most proud of my personal life being a mother and a grandmother. I have two wonderful sons and two wonderful, beautiful grandchildren and a lovely daughter-in-law, and I'm very pleased that they're my family, and also have extended family in different parts of the country.
When did symptoms of Parkinson's first appear for you?
Okay, well, I was diagnosed in 2008, but probably around 2000-ish, I would say, the first symptoms appeared, but I had no idea that they were Parkinson's related because I thought Parkinson's just meant a tremor, and the tremor didn't appear till about 2 years before my diagnosis. So, some of the other symptoms were, shall I go into those now?
Oh, I think people would like to know,
okay.
What it was back then.
Okay, I'd just like to caution people who are out there that if you have these individual symptoms, it does not mean you have Parkinson's disease, because sometimes people want to know all the symptoms, and then, oh, constipation, gee, I have that, I wonder if I have Parkinson's. So I just want to make sure that people are clear that, first of all, let me preface it with saying that Parkinson's is a movement disorder where parts of the body that you don't want to move, like hands, arms, or whatever is shaking, will be moving, and parts of the body that sometimes you would like to move, like the digestive system and the bowels, aren't moving very well. So my first symptom that I was aware of, although at the time I wasn't aware that it was related to Parkinson's, was constipation, world class, which lasted for many, many years. And then some other things that started happening. My handwriting, being an English teacher and constantly correcting papers and writing all kinds of editorial comments, I thought that I was just getting lazy and sloppy as I was getting older. I didn't give, I thought I was in control. I wasn't in control. My handwriting was like chicken scratch because of the Parkinson's. And I just kept telling myself that if you just took your time, it would look better. Well, that wasn't the case. So it's better now, by the way. And let's see what else. The handwriting, the constipation, the tremors. I also had aches and pains all over, and as the Parkinson's progressed, I mean, I didn't know what was causing aches and pains, but I could actually feel my muscles being squeezed on the one hand and felt like they were being pulled and stretched on the other. So they were kind of being pushed and pulled from all directions is what I felt internally, and it was very painful and very fatiguing. And that was another thing, fatigue. And then also I had some difficulty swallowing, not so much when I was upright eating as when I was lying down in bed, allergies and things like that. I would be swallowing in the middle of the night or not swallowing and choking and waking up to that. So I had some of that. Besides the tremors, which the worst tremor was in my left hand, and I'm left-handed, but I did have tremor activity on the right side as well, and my right leg was the leg that was most affected by Parkinson's, and what would happen would be that I would be walking, and in my mind, according to what my brain thought that it had lifted my right foot, but in reality, that hadn't happened, and so my foot would drag along the ground, not all the time, just once in a while, but that was happening a little more frequently towards the end there. Let's see what else. Oh, and another thing was that when I would go to, in quotes, relax at night in bed, for some reason my fingertips would curl up toward my wrists. That was something that was kind of difficult. And even when I was getting a massage one time and the masseuse touched my wrist, it was sort of like a automatic response that my fingertips shot up toward my wrist and curled in. And then I did have, I think as a result of all that possibly, I did have some difficulty with cognitive functioning because I was trying so hard to keep everything together. And I've worked with learning disabled students as part of my career too, and now I understand what's meant by the fact that they're trying so hard to keep everything together that learning on top of it all is really difficult, because I had gone from being somebody who was really quick study at a lot of things to having a real slow learning curve, if existent at all. I think that's most of the symptoms. If I think of any others, I'll pop them up when I think of them.
Did you notice any loss of smell, the ability to smell?
Possibly. Hard to say. Sometimes people would smell things and I didn't smell them, and sometimes not. But then I get a stuffy nose and that kind of thing anyway. So that I really don't have a definitive answer for.
When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed April 29th, 2008. And at the time, it was not a surprise. The tremors had gotten worse and worse. I kept telling myself that I was maybe a type A, or maybe, you know, that second cup of coffee that I had some mornings was doing it. But when it got to the point where it interfered with eating soup and I really had difficulty getting the spoon up to my mouth without spilling, I made an appointment with the neurologist. Also, another symptom that I had that I think other people may relate to is that there were times when I just had random arm movements. This was prior to my diagnosis, because somebody said to me, oh, that could be for medication, but I wasn't on medication at the time it first happened. I was, for instance, I was sitting in the dentist chair, and the hygienist was leaning over me, and all of a sudden my left arm just shot up and got her under the chin. I wasn't intending to punch her, and I didn't know how to explain it and was so sorry, and then I think it was a month or two later I was diagnosed, and I wrote a note and explained what had happened, so that was another symptom that I had too.
In terms of the process of the diagnosis, did you have one appointment with the neurologist where you were diagnosed, or did it require multiple appointments with a number of tests to be able to determine that you had to Parkinson's disease?
There was one very long appointment where he did a number of tests, and he explained to me, the neurologist, that there was no definitive diagnosis for Parkinson's, which I later on found out a little differently, but that he was about 99% sure from how I presented that I did have Parkinson's, and what they did do for a diagnosis was that they prescribed a trial run on the dopamine drug Sinemet, and if symptoms started to abate, then that clinched the diagnosis. And prior to that they would do a brain scan. I've since found out that I think a PET scan probably could have done that, but we don't offer that as part of our, generally as part of our health insurance here in the United States. You probably know more about that than I do, Robert.
So you took that trial of Sinemet that
yes.
was prescribed, and that showed a positive result?
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, I started, and prior to my diagnosis, I had already, just about several months before, I had already submitted my retirement papers for teaching. I just knew that I did not have the energy to endure another year in all the pain and everything that I was going through. But as a result, there were going to be, some banquets and awards and this and that. So when I took the dopamine drug, which was originally supposed to only be like for a two-week trial or something, it was working so well at the time that I asked the neurologist, could I continue on it till the end of school, mid-June, because I wanted to go out on a high. I didn't want people knowing what was going on, and the last thing I wanted was sympathy. So he said, sure, you can do that. So I did continue on the drug for a while longer, and then went off it, and was surprised at how much worse I seemed when I went off it, and didn't want to go back on the dopamine drug because it was very early in my situation with Parkinson's, and wanted to save that for later on because of potential side effects, wanted to put that off. So when I started having real difficulty without the drug, I asked, you know, was there something else I could go on? I was put on another drug, which I had such terrible results, such terrible reaction to it, that I went off that drug and went back on Sinemet, and then stayed on the Sinemet for about another year till I discovered Qigong. And on the Sinemet, during that course of that year, you know, at first everything seemed, it almost seemed like I didn't have Parkinson's for, you know, everything seemed pretty good. And then little by little, I guess I started building up a tolerance or whatever happens. But I was at the point where I was going to have to increase my medication in order, if I wanted to, you know, have a more full and active life. And I really didn't want to do that.
What was your reaction to the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease?
I was not totally surprised. Again, as I said, you know, I saw the tremor, and so the diagnosis didn't surprise me. What did surprise me was everything that came along with the package. I thought the package was just tremor. I didn't realize that it included pain and really being a prisoner in your own body. So my reaction to that was a little bit of surprise, but, and also it was the first thing on my mind, you know, when I would wake up in the morning, and it was the last thing on my mind when I would go to bed. And after about 3 days of that, after the diagnosis, I had a conversation with myself in bed one night, and it was funny. I mean, I guess I had a meeting. I had an executive board meeting with body, mind, and spirit. We all got into the room and sat down and listened to each other. And I said, basically, I'm a teacher. I believe that everything is a learning experience. Parkinson's teach me. Body, teach me. What am I supposed to learn? And, you know, it was about just a little over a year after that that I learned how to heal myself. So I feel, you know, very grateful for that.
How did you find Qigong?
Well, part of my reaction to my diagnosis, which I had meant to mention, was I went to, at the time, Borders was still open in Marin County. I went to Borders, and I think I bought out the bookshelf on Parkinson's. I don't know, 5-7 books, besides which going online and going to different organizations, Parkinson's support groups, signing up for the DNA study 23andMe, and let's see, what else did I do? I just really went on a search for information, and twice I came across quotes about Qigong. One was from Dr. Oz, and I don't think he mentioned Parkinson's in particular, but the quote was something, I'm paraphrasing, like, if you want to live to be 100 years and feel good, do Qigong. And then there was another that I found somewhere in one of the many readings that talked about how all movement was good for Parkinson's, but particularly Qigong, that was the best. And I scratched my head because I wasn't even sure how to pronounce it, and I thought, I live in Marin County. If I haven't heard of this, where is it? And it was shortly after that it showed up. And I'm very grateful to my friend Jean Adams, who convinced me to go to the first Healer Within workshop led by Ming Tung Gu here in Marin County. And so that was how I first became introduced to Qigong. And
we have had individuals on the radio show who have reported travels to all parts of the earth, to Japan, to Jamaica, to England, to France, to Mexico, to Canada, you name it. You went to China. What made you decide to go to China?
Well, in answering that question, the first thing that I'd like to do is to show my gratitude to the teacher who led me to China, which is Ming Tung Gu of the Qi Center here in Northern California, and to his teacher, Dr. Pang Ming, who is still over there in China. And Ming Tung studied under Dr. Pang Ming, who had set up the Medicine Free Hospital years ago in Beijing area, which has since closed down. But when I went to that first Healer Within workshop on June 19th, 2009, here in Marin County, Ming Tung at that point was going to have a retreat in China in that following September. And so I saw shots of where we would be staying, and it was just such a beautiful, peaceful, serene environment. I felt like I really needed to go there. And I want to emphasize very strongly to the listening audience, you don't need to go anywhere. Your health is inside of you, and your ultimate good health and access to it is inside of you. For me, I think that the decision to make the trip was in itself, in some ways, the start of healing, because I never did things like that for myself. And when I first thought about going, I thought, only other people do things like that. I don't do things like that. And then I thought, why can't I be like other people? Why can't I step up to the plate and do that? This is my life. And it might be crazy to travel around the world with Parkinson's disease, but that's what I did. And I was off my meds at the time that I made the trip, too. I had already come off the medication through Qigong. So that was how I decided to make the trip. I wanted to go to the retreat. I wanted to practice Qigong 24/7. And I just thought that it would be, maybe by doing something that was so out of the ordinary for me, maybe some other things that were out of the ordinary would start to happen for me too. And they did.
We've heard on the radio show reports from a number of individuals on the time required to be able to fully recover and become symptom-free. It's really all over the place. Mm-hmm. What was your experience? How long did it take you to be able to see sustained relief and then to become actually symptom-free?
Sustained relief started happening right away with the first time that I practiced at the Healer Within workshop. I started feeling one layer of pain strip away. There were many layers beneath that, so it was a gradual process, but I knew that something was happening. In terms of relief, even before I left for China, as I said, I was off the meds, and how that started was that I started forgetting to take my medication. And how that started was that prior to Qigong, as the medication would start to wear off every few hours, the tremors would increase, the pain would increase, the tightness and stiffness would increase. So when I first started forgetting, I was concerned. I was still sort of operating on, you know, the Western medical scale of I have to take my medication every so often. And then I realized, wait a minute, if my body is forgetting, maybe my body is telling me that I don't need to do that. So anyway, so I started feeling relief right away. The last thing to go was the tremor. And the tremor was visible in China, and it was visible, for months after that. Not a whole lot, less and less and less. And sometimes tremoring would appear more when I was doing Qigong or when I was at a retreat or at a weekend, which would mean that the energy was, you know, moving through the blockage. It's not always a bad thing. And then when I saw the neurologist, when was it, in last September, he declared me free of any signs of Parkinson's. Frankly, I think that I'm still healing. Whether I'm still healing from Parkinson's or healing from life, I don't know, but I just feel better and stronger every day. And I realized that I didn't, and talking about the neurologist, you asked about the diagnosis. I saw one neurologist several times. Then I saw a movement disorder specialist who also confirmed the diagnosis, and then I saw another neurologist. So I was actually seen by three different neurology professionals.
People I know, Bianca, are probably thinking, you sound like somebody I used to know by the name of Blanche. Is this Blanche? I know a Blanche Mollet, but I don't know a Bianca. So what's the deal? Are you both Bianca and Blanche?
Yes, I am. The story goes like this. Well, actually, my email for 30 years or more has been Bianca because I was named after my Italian grandmother who was Bianca. But the name, from the time I received it, was anglicized to Blanche. When I got to China, Ming Tung and my other beloved Chinese teachers, Teacher Ma, Teacher Zhao, Teacher Zhang, Teacher Wu, they could not pronounce Blanche. They couldn't even come close to Branch. I would have accepted Branch, but it wasn't even that. And I wouldn't have known that they were talking to me. So finally, I just looked at them and I said, can you say Bianca? And they nodded their heads and went, Bianca, Bianca. And I thought, okay, we got a name. So that's how that happened. And then, as it turns out, that's my life changed at about the same time that that name change happened, because I went from somebody who was sick and shrinking to somebody who's well and whose life is exploding in all kinds of good ways, like a beautiful fireworks. So I like it. And I will answer to Bianca or Blanche. Just don't call me late to dinner.
Everybody I know is interested in some of the messages that you have acquired, some of the learnings as a result of your experience over the last 3 years. So what are some of these messages?
Okay, my first message is going to not answer directly that question, but because when you were talking about the video, it reminded me of something. And I just want to say to those people who do click onto the video that it shows the first third of the Qigong practice, lift Qi up, pour Qi down, because I've been getting emails from people who are watching and practicing, they're copying the video, and that's only one third of the practice. So I just wanted to make that clear. And that I have a document that I can attach to send out to email people if they want to know, you know, which DVDs I practice with and what CDs and whatever. So anyway, I just wanted to get that clear. Thank you. The question, again, was, I guess, what have I learned? And I think the biggest thing I would say to those people who are working on healing of any kind is to celebrate small victories. I think in our society, in our culture, so many times we set up these long-term goals, and, you know, we're not going to celebrate them until we get there. And what I have learned, and actually it came to me, you know, it comes to parents. We celebrate every little thing our children do. Or when I was teaching special education, somebody would make a small step and we would celebrate it. Well, do the same thing for yourself. Whatever progress you make, celebrate. I'm working with someone in the London area right now, and since she's been doing Qigong this very brief time, she went to her, I think it was Tai Chi class or some class, and the teacher told her that her movements are more fluid. That's something to celebrate. That's, you know, it doesn't have to be that the tremors disappear before you start celebrating. Ming Tung, my Qigong master, has said, a happy cell is a healthy cell. And I really believe that. And there are some, I don't know the studies on this. I've only spoken to people who have claimed to have read studies, but that maybe it's not that the dopamine produces the happiness, but maybe the happiness produces the dopamine. So it's, you know, think about that. Make yourself happy and make yourself well. So that would be one of the first things. And then in line with that, I would say that I have learned gratitude. I first learned gratitude with the Parkinson's because I knew that my life as I was living it was going to get smaller and smaller according to the prognosis that I believed at the time. And as a result, I really appreciated everything that I could yet do. And now I can do so much more. And as a result, I appreciate all that. The fact that I can pour myself a cup of coffee in the morning and not have to worry about the mug shaking. Just things that I no longer have to worry about make me so grateful. I never realized, you know, what a piece of work the body is. It's amazing. So I'm very, very grateful for that. And generally, every night before I go to sleep, I try to think of three things that I could be grateful for during the day. Most days I find even more. Some days it's a stretch to find two, but most days three come up pretty easy, if not more. And I think that those are probably good rules of good health.
So what are some of the other messages, Bianca, that you are taking away from this experience?
I would say that dedication to the practice. I mean, I don't make a secret of the fact that I practice 2 to 3 hours a day, and more if I can. It's a dedicated practice, but it's a playful practice. And, you know, just have fun. I really have fun with the practice. Use your mind creatively. Sometimes people get concerned, particularly people with Parkinson's, sometimes they're concerned about doing things the right way. They want to visualize everything exactly the right way, and they want to do the movements exactly the right way. And, you know, I have to say that I initially, didn't do the practice very well because my balance was off. I was having trouble following directions. But my intent was there, 8,000,000%. And the intent is the most important thing. If you have the intent to heal and you're diligently working, don't worry about, in quotes, getting it right. Just keep doing it, and it will get better and better. I have told some people with Parkinson's, and I'll modify the language for the radio, but if somebody had come up to me when I had Parkinson's and said, you can be rid of this if you jump into an ocean of feces and swim a mile, I would have dived in and said, which direction? So, it's the intent that is so important, and not to worry about the rest. Everything will fall into place.
Describe, if you would, Bianca, a typical day for you. Do you get up in the morning and the first thing you do is Qigong, or does it look differently?
Actually, I have some healing CDs made by my teacher, Ming Tung, that I keep in the CD player by the bed. So as I go to sleep at night, when I get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and when I wake up in the morning, I start out listening to a healing CD. And then very often I do, before I get out of bed after that, very often I will do 10 or more minutes of a practice called La Chi. Which is a simple arm movement, and I don't want to go into all of that right now. If you want to know later, I'll tell you. Depending on what the day is, because sometimes I'm called to substitute teach. Sometimes, depending on how much time I have, I will do. I like to start off the morning doing a meditation practice. And then going into the physical practice. In the past, I've done it reverse, but right now I'm starting off doing the meditation, and I generally get it in different segments. Most of the CDs and DVDs are about 40 to 50 minutes, and then, you know, any Qigong I can do on my own, I can make it for my own time slot, but I generally try to practice for at least half hour to 40 minutes at a time if I can. If my day is so fragmented that I have to do it less than that for a while, I do. But the important thing is just to get it in. So basically morning, afternoon, and evening I like to get some in. If I'm working, I can't always get an afternoon part to late afternoon. So I just modify as the day demands.
Some of my guests describe the fight or flight kind of energy that has been typical for most of their life. Would this describe you? And if so, how has Qigong been able to counteract that?
I would say yes, that that very much describes me, and that I didn't realize that I was constantly holding my body in a tensed position until I started to relax, because I didn't know that there was anything else. I thought that's how my body was. And little by little, I would say this is where the meditation, and particularly the sound healing meditation, has been extremely helpful in calming me down and making me aware of my body and the sensations of my body. Because I think, yes, there's that fight or flight, which some health practitioners, you know, say that the effect on the kidneys has a great deal to do with Parkinson's, too. So that's something to look into. But, that really was something that the meditation, and I think particularly the sound healing meditation, as well as the slow movements of the lift chi up, pour chi down practice and the standing meditation, the things that I did initially for my healing, I think those all really helped. And now I see the difference. As a matter of fact, I've explained to some people that when I first started healing from Parkinson's, that posture that my hands used to have in the evening of hooking when I was in bed, I was getting better and didn't need to do that anymore, but my body memory was still there, and I would catch my hands doing that even though they didn't need to do it anymore, and I would have to make a conscious effort. No, just relax the hands. That's not necessary. It was very interesting.
I talked with a gentleman just this week who reported he was spending $1,000 a month on supplements. Are taking supplements a part of what is important to you to attend to?
You know, it's funny, but in the last few years since I've been healing, I've done less and less with supplements. I did for a long time take 1,200 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, which is quite expensive, because that was supposed to be the wonderful thing. And now I've just read Michael J. Fox's group has come out with a study, or is publishing the results of a study, that say that there's nothing definitive about that. I still take 600 milligrams of coenzyme Q10 a day, just because it's supposed to be good for heart and other things. But I'm really, I'm not doing anything big with supplements right now.
How about diet?
My diet tends to be healthy. For years, I've been doing wheat and gluten-free. Again, I'm not fanatic about anything. If I'm not going to let anything get in the way of a good celebration, let's put it that way. But for the most part, I do wheat and gluten-free, and, you know, watch not processed foods and sugar and that kind of thing. But am a lot less strict about my diet than I was, let's say, 10 years ago. that's basically, you know, I watch salt and that kind of thing, and try to use herbs and fresh vegetables, organic, but again, not fanatic.
The topic in probably a fourth of my radio shows is exercise, or forced exercise. To what extent does exercise beyond Qigong play in your life?
Right now, not a whole lot. I'm a walker and a hiker, and actually, once I healed from the Parkinson's, I realized that some of the pain and problem with my right leg was not Parkinson's related. Some of it was, particularly the dragging of the foot, but I have some other issues that I've been working on that are healing beautifully, but part of the healing is that I'm not going out there and taking the hills like I used to right now. So right now I'm working on healing my leg with Qigong and giving it a little bit of a rest otherwise. But as it gets better, you know, like... I'm not going out on the trails every day now, but I did go out once this week, and I will increase little by little, because that's what I love to do, is to be in nature.
beyond Qigong and some of else of what you've talked about, what other therapies have you found have been particularly useful and helpful to you?
You know, I'm basically, I think, what they call maybe a one-trick pony. I investigated many different things and couldn't do some because of financial constraints or didn't seem right for me or whatever. And I'm very fortunate that my healing came through Qigong because basically, you know, I think whatever we need, if we're really looking for it, you know, comes to us. And I would have had probably a difficult time managing a whole lot of different systems. So for me, putting all my eggs in the Qigong basket worked beautifully. It still does. So, yeah, that's basically as far as other therapies go. I think massage is important, and I still try to get a massage, when I can, maybe even once a month, just to, you know, if I can pamper myself that way. But I think movement, any kind of movement, whatever movement works for people is great. But I would say mix Qigong, wisdom healing Qigong, which is the kind of Qigong that I do, or Zeneng Qigong, is with my basic path to healing.
From your intimate acquaintance with Qigong, can you explain to people how this particular therapy succeeds and works for you?
Okay, I'm going to answer that two ways. The first one is going to be my cop-out because my Qigong teacher does it better than I. And if you just go to QiCenter.com, he explains Qigong. But I will attempt to paraphrase what I learned from him, which is that, the ancient Chinese believed that all disease or almost all disease was a blockage of energy, and that by getting energy to move through the body freely, that the illness would start to disappear. And so what the Qigong practice does is it basically invokes the energy, which is out there in the 96% of the universe that is unseen, because we only see 4% of the universe that's material. So it invokes the healing energy to come in, and as the different movements of the practice and the different meditations of the practice direct the energy to where it needs to go to heal. The energy also has its own intelligence, and sometimes it will go to places on its own that need to be healed. So it's pretty difficult to articulate. That's about as close as I can get.
Where do these blockages come from? Is it like traveling down the interstate and all of a sudden you're up against an accident and have to wait 4 or 5 hours?
I think, and again, I'm just interpreting here, but I think it probably comes from life patterns. For instance, that fright or flight that we were talking about response, the body tenses, and the body keeps doing that over and over again. The muscles are going to become tense and the blockages are going to occur. So I think that basically what the Qigong does, and that's why it's a gradual process, is it gradually breaks down those old unhealthy patterns. Because, I mean, people have been healed from cancer, diabetes, asthma, orthopedic types of conditions as well. It's just addictions. It's amazing what people have been healed from through Qigong.
What are some of the other messages that you want to make sure that people hear?
I think basically, along with the gratitude, I think there, what I learned and what I would like to share is that I learned to have confidence in that inner voice, and to realize that there is good out there for me, and by staying positive, I'm on the right trail. Loving myself is a really important message. And I thought I was really good at loving other people, and I knew I had some work to do with loving myself, and now the more I do that, the more I see that I open up to loving others too, and that really is the answer. And again, I can't explain that scientifically, but I know that I think Bruce Lipton and some other scientists had actually measured chi, measured energy, and are able to show what happens as the energy runs through the system too. And all I can say is love is a good catalyst there.
You mentioned, Bianca, that you were teaching, you then retired, and now you're back to teaching, apparently in a substitute sense. How has your life changed otherwise since your healing experience?
Just in terms of my relationship with my family, I have so much more energy. I'm volunteering I just finished a year of volunteering in my granddaughter's kindergarten class and had a great time and plan to go back next year and volunteer with her first grade class. And then as an offshoot of my substitute teaching, as I said, I spent part of my teaching time teaching special education, so I'm often called into special education classes and actually have started introducing Qigong to those special education classes, and teacher and staff there are so pleased with what's happening that now there's another two teachers who I understand are interested in my bringing that into the schools next year. So this thing has just taken on a life of its own, and in terms of purpose, I am so grateful to have the purpose now that I have a message to share and just want to bring that message of hope to everyone. So I'm grateful that for whatever reason, I'm a person who, at this point in my life, can do that.
You have a bucket list, Bianca, and are there certain things that you want to make sure that you do in your life?
You know, I think that I don't have a bucket list per se right now, almost because I just like watching things unfold and being very spontaneous. And, you know, I started coaching people overseas, and something that's on my mind now is, you know, why not go overseas and visit the people that I've been working with. And so who knows? I mean, I just don't know. It's opened up all kinds of things. And, I'm going to be 63 next month. And for the first 60 years of my life, fear was the co-author. And for the rest of my life, I would like confidence and joy and a spirit of adventure to be the co-authors. So that's my bucket list.
And all of those three co-authors come through clearly during this radio show encounter with you, as everybody can also experience from just listening to your discussion of how your life has been changed over the last several years. It's quite a remarkable story. You are then now doing coaching for people. Tell us about that.
Well... even prior to the video, somehow people were hearing about me, and I started getting emails from around the country. And then after the YouTube video, I've heard from people in Europe as well as a woman in Argentina, and all wanting to know what I did and how I did it and things like that. So I just started coaching the people overseas.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, right now there's my email, which I think you have posted as well, and I know that it's posted at the end of the video, and it's posted also on the Qi Center website, but I'll give it out. It's Bianca, B-I-A-N-C-A, 1738, at AOL.com. So right now that's the way to contact me.
Some of the people listening to this show have just recently been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. What do you want to say to them now?
I just want to say that you don't need to, you know, you've been given a box, but you don't need to crawl into it. I welcome you to jump out of the box and explore. it is possible to reverse symptoms and work on the fear, work on the confidence, work on the joy.
Would you describe yourself then, Bianca, as symptom free today?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would. Yes.
And tell us more, if you would please, about what you would describe to be the healing journey.
I think everybody has, will have a different experience of a healing journey. And for me, it was listening to the inner self, not shutting that down. You know, there was a voice inside of me that was coming out very strongly, telling me what would be the right thing to do. And as I mentioned in my video interview, even when I was diagnosed, before I found Qigong, I tried to stay positive. When people asked how I was feeling, I wasn't going to go on with a list of everything that was bothering me, because nobody would want to hear that, you know. And I wanted, to me, it was really important to try to stay socially connected. And I thought, you know, I don't want to turn people off. But every once in a while, I would get really honest with somebody in the family or somebody who was close. And my stepmother in New York had asked me how I was doing at that time. And I said, well, it's not getting any better. This thing only goes in one direction, you know. And right after I said it, it was almost like I was hit with a lightning bolt or something. Something inside my head said, that's wrong. You know that's wrong. And I don't think I ever forgot that message from somewhere deep inside of me that I didn't know existed, telling me, you don't have to keep getting worse. I don't know where that came from, but, you know, listening to the inner voice was key for me.
What in general has been your experience when you tell other individuals, especially several years back, that you were diagnosed with Parkinson's disease? What are the reactions?
Well, again, I really tried to stay positive because I couldn't stand seeing sympathy or sorrow in somebody's face. So when I told them, they probably thought I was an idiot because I said, oh, this is a gift. I get to do whatever I want to do now. I can be as lazy as I want. I've worked hard all my life. Now I can be lazy. You know, I mean, that was how I put it out there. So, and when they asked what they could do to help, I said, what you can do to help is to treat me as though I don't have Parkinson's disease. If you're going to go on a hike or something and you think I might be interested and then you think, oh, no, she has Parkinson's, now she won't be, call me anyway and let me make the decision as to whether or not I feel like going that day. So, I gave them the guidelines. And so there wasn't a whole lot of difference in how most people treated me. Some people fell by the sidelines a little bit, and that was okay. You know, that's what they needed to do.
Would you describe your experience as an experience where you did it all by yourself, or would you describe this as an experience where you got help?
Oh, it's definitely the help of the chi field, and every practitioner of Qigong or any kind of energy work, or it's all out there because of the practice. As Ming Tung says, in the chi field, 1 + 1 = 3. You know, it's a cumulative effect. So I had access to it, and I had the motivation and determination to do it. So in that way, I had the key and unlocked the door. But then when I got inside this beautiful universe, there was all kinds of help.
I'm Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. My guest is Bianca Mollet, who has been talking about her complete and full recovery from having experienced the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. She just explained to everyone that she didn't do it alone. She got quite a bit of help. And I want to suggest to everyone, you have an offer on the table. She has extended her email address, and she has a lot of support materials that you can go reference, and you can actually call her up and get some person-to-person help. It seems to me that that's an incredible offer, and I want to invite you to take advantage of that. My experience of the individuals who are recovering and who are completely recovered, and for those of you who have been listening to this radio show, you are well aware there are many individuals who fall into that category. I don't know of anybody who's done it by themselves. Everybody gets help, And so here you have an offer from an individual who's gone through the full experience, who's found a solution that works for her. And so if her approach calls to you, I want to suggest follow up, take some action, do some emailing, and talk with her directly. I know that there are a very large number of individuals who are listening to this show live. We always have many, 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 many people who listen to the archives, but this, as it turns out, is a show where I know we have many individuals who are listening live. So for those of you who are listening now, I wouldn't sit around and wait. Take action. I'd read her material, look at the video, email her, connect, and get additional information and support, for clearly here is a route to recovery that has worked beautifully for her. Bianca, is there anything else you want to be sure and say to our listening audience that you haven't had a chance to say yet?
Well, I'd like to express gratitude for you and for what you're doing and the beautiful work that you're doing, as I'm just starting to learn of this. As I said, I didn't say this to you, but when I've spoken to groups, I came to this whole field of energy work and Qigong and everything a total bonehead. You know, the message that the universe will take care of you for me just used to be blah, 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 blah. It didn't mean anything. And now I know so differently. So I would just like to say that even if what I'm saying sounds a little woo-woo and a little intimidating, if you're at all intrigued, at all curious, you know, you don't have to have been on this road for years and years and years. I just kind of stumbled onto the path, and I'm so grateful that I did. It's worth exploring.
The website that you mentioned too, Bianca, earlier, that people can reference to find out more about Qigong is called qicenter.com, and I'm thinking that's spelled qicenter.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
So if you're interested in exploring and learning more about what Qigong is all about, then that obviously would be an excellent resource for you to visit on the web.
I'd just like to say that there are people who months ago contacted me and as a result of their contact with me got connected with the Qi Center and have since come out, people from Oregon, from New Mexico, from Virginia, have come out to the Qi Center here in Northern California, in Petaluma, California, just north of Marin County at the IONS Institute, and they've come for retreats to help with their recovery. So, check it out. Together and do a little summit meeting or something.
Oh, I think that would be so much fun. Well, maybe that's what we could do is for a Parkinson's Recovery Summit is we could just gather everybody together and do some videotaping of everybody's story. There are quite a few individuals, and I've had a number of them on the radio show. And the other truth in telling is I've had conversations with actually a surprising number of individuals, but they've not been on the show for one reason or another. As it turns out, when a person becomes symptom-free, many people just go off and do their own thing, you know, that sort of leave behind the whole history of how they experience these neurological challenges. So it's rather an interesting drama. And then, of course, there are some individuals that really experience significant challenges neurologically but don't want anybody to know about it. So they would prefer not to go on the show and talk about the story of all of the challenges that they experienced, even though they are now symptom-free. So there are just a large number of people out there now, and I think your idea of beginning to create a body of persons and we'll just have a big convention, invite everybody to come and hear the stories, is a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I mean, any excuse for a party, right?
That's right.
I also wanted to say that when you asked me about how I handled the initial diagnosis and everything, when I went back to work after that afternoon I was diagnosed in April and went back to work, I chose not to tell my coworkers till after retirement. Again, because I didn't want at all these different banquets and award ceremonies and things like that, I didn't want to be a downer for anyone. But what I did do was I did tell my principal, because I was on the Sinemet drug and because some of its side effects, although they were not supposed to be frequent. If I had a side effect of something like hallucination, I wanted him to know that it was from what it was from. I did confidentially tell him about the diagnosis. And then after I retired and after all the, you know, all the dust had settled and all the celebrations were over, then because I did want to substitute and I knew that my tremor, you know, had been noticeable, I didn't want people getting the wrong impression about why I was tremoring. So then I called everybody that I thought might be asking me to substitute and let them know about my diagnosis, because I thought, you know, they're more likely to call me if they think it's Parkinson's than if they think I'm drinking on the job or something, you know. So that was how I handled that. Strange. So, I mean, I know different people have different ways of how they deal and how they what they cover and what they don't cover. It's very interesting.
So, Bianca Mole, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to tell us your story of recovery from the symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
It's been my pleasure, and thank you again for all that you're doing out there.
It's an honor and a privilege. And that's what's happening on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you are listening to this radio show, that you are by definition on the road to recovery.